I'm Mindy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Later in the hour, the music and events at this year's Working Waterfront Festival. But first, it was 26 years ago this October, the no-name storm or the Halloween gale was churning in the waters south of Nova Scotia. 13 people perished in the storm, including 6 on board the Andrea Gale, a sword fishing boat out of Gloucester. Also in the storm was Linda Greenlaw, captain of another sword fishing boat, the Hannah Bowden. Greenlaw's experiences in the storm were later featured in Sebastian Younger's best-selling book, The Perfect Storm, where he described her as not just the only female sword fishing captain, but one of the best captains, period, on the entire East Coast. Linda Greenlaw joins us on the phone. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks. Was it really 26 years ago?
I know. It's hard to believe, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah, so tell us, remind us what made that storm such an unusual meteorological event.
Well, 3 different low pressure systems kind of joined forces. And I think the most unusual thing about it was one of the low pressure systems actually backed up or went from east to west, which is unusual in this hemisphere.
Now, when you're sword fishing, you are out to catch as many fish as possible. These are expensive trips to make, and you need to make the most of your time at sea. What was the information or forecast that made you realize you had better leave the fishing grounds and head in?
Well, actually, I did not leave the fishing grounds by the time we knew we had weather. It was imminent. Boats just west of me on the tail of the bank were really struggling, and we were in contact on the radio. I was farthest to the east, so I had a little bit of warning so that I could run my boat up into the colder water to the north, the Labrador Current. Most of these low-pressure systems really feed on the Gulf Stream, and we fish on the edge of the Gulf Stream or the hotter water. So I wasn't running for shore or going in. I rode the storm out, but I did have a little warning as opposed to what I believe the Andrea Gale and captain and crew. I think they had no warning, and it just happened on top of them.
Yeah, I think it's hard for people to imagine what the conditions are like at the worst. So you know, we saw the special effects in the movie Perfect Storm. Does it give someone the true sense of what it's like to be in those conditions?
Well, I think visually it did. I think, you know, Warner Brothers did a really good job with their special effects. But, you know, there's no way to really, really know what it feels like unless you're experiencing it. Obviously, it's very scary, but, you know, you're very busy, so you don't really have time to feel the fear until after the fact.
Mm. In 1997, Sebastian Younger's book, The Perfect Storm, came out, which later was adapted into the movie. You were featured in both. When you first sat down with Sebastian Younger to talk about the storm, did it ever occur to you that your life might be changed dramatically because of that book?
No, absolutely not. I'm still pinching myself every day for, you know, the changes in my life that I attribute to Sebastian Younger's portrayal of me, a very generous portrayal in his book.
So what was your reaction when all of a sudden you became famous?
Well, I don't know if I've ever really reacted to it. I like to think I'm still the same person. Unfortunately, my friends and family still treat me the same. So, you know, my life has changed in that, you know, I've gone from fishing full-time career to writing and fishing combination. So where most people, I won't say most people, I have a lot of friends who would kill to have a book published.
Right.
And they'd do anything to have a book published. I feel like my writing really supports what I love to do, which is my fishing.
Yeah. Now, your first book was The Hungry Ocean, and it chronicled a one-month sword fishing trip. The book was a New York Times bestseller. Now, had you done any writing before that, and what compelled you to write that book?
I was invited to write my first book, a result of, again, this very generous portrayal in the book, The Perfect Storm. I literally had publishers calling me saying, hey, we've read The Perfect Storm. We're intrigued with this female fisherman thing you have going on. Will you write a book? And at first my thought was, no, and that sounds like a lot of work. And I was in love with my life. I loved fishing. I like the way I feel when I'm at sea. I'm passionate about catching fish. I had never dreamed, aspired, hoped to do anything else. I was 100% satisfied and fulfilled with my life of fishing. Well, of course, I had to realize what an opportunity I was being handed, an opportunity to write a book. I had never written. I did major in English when I was in college, but that was because I enjoyed reading and I had no idea what I wanted to do, as an adult. I graduated with a degree in English and went fishing. Mm-hmm.
25 years ago, there weren't many women going to sea on fishing vessels in any capacity, much less as captain. Has that changed much since then?
I know it has locally. I'm lobster fishing here out of Maine, and there are many women in the stern of the boat, and there are many women who own their own boats and go as captain. The offshore fishery, I mean, I know of a handful of women who captain boats. There are, in general, more women in these what people think of as non-traditional jobs, not just fishing, of course. It's changed, in every industry. There are not great numbers of women fishing, and I think that, at least in my area, commercial fishing, other than lobstering, is not a great opportunity for men or women, so I think it's not something that young women are jumping into.
Yeah. What do you hear from women in the fishing industry? You're obviously very passionate about it. Are the other women that you talk to, do they kind of share that same passion you do?
Yes, and I think the reason for that is that women who are going to sea, whether it's fishing or merchant shipping or sailing, women who go to sea do it because they have a passion for it. A lot of cases, young guys get into fishing because they're born into it, mm-hmm. and it's kind of expected. That's never the case with the woman. The woman's there because it's what she wants to do and loves doing.
Mm-hmm. What's the state of the sword fishery today in comparison to 25 years ago?
The swordfish fishery in the North Atlantic is very strong. The resource is, the scientists are saying that the swordfish stock is at 100% maximum sustainable yield, which is optimum. So that's, it's a really nice thing to be able to say after, many, many years of knowing and hearing differently.
Hmm. You mentioned that you're doing lobster fishing now. Is there anything you miss about sword fishing or being at sea for extended periods of time?
I don't miss many things about sword fishing. I miss some of my crew members. I miss catching the fish. I mean, it's a very exciting fishery. I mean, swordfish are, they're big, they're beautiful. They're alive when they come aboard. They look like a unicorn and they've got this big bill. It's very exciting. It's exhilarating. I miss that, but I don't miss everything about being gone all the time.
Mm. After writing The Hungry Ocean, you wrote several more nonfiction books that described life in coastal Maine as a lobster fisherman. Then you began writing fiction and mysteries. So what prompted the switch to fiction? And do you find it there are more challenges than writing nonfiction?
Well, the switch to fiction was basically the publishers wanted more from me, and I didn't have anything else to say about myself. I mean, my first three or four books were very much memoirs, and I felt like I had exhausted pretty much every thought I'd ever had. So the publishers suggested I try my hand at fiction and suggested I start with mystery series. So I signed a contract for three mysteries, and I'm now working on number four. Writing is difficult, and I have learned that writing fiction is actually, in my case, is more difficult than the nonfiction. It seems that starting with a totally blank slate where anything is possible is actually quite difficult
for me. Where do you go? where will I go? So your most recent book is Shiver Hitch, and it's a Jane Bunker mystery. So tell us more about the main character, Jane Bunker.
Jane Bunker, and first of all, I'll say, writing in the first person, one real challenge is keeping the main character separate from Linda Greenlaw. Mm-hmm. So I've had to really be careful to ensure that Jane Bunker does not become Linda Greenlaw. And that's not as easy as it sounds. I've made some, we've made some real efforts here. Jane Bunker was born in Maine, but she was whisked away very quickly by her mother and found herself in Miami, Florida, where she was raised by a single mom, a really quirky, not typical childhood. I like to think that Jane Bunker is she's savvy, she's sassy. They say write about what you know. So Jane Bunker is very comfortable at sea and in small coastal communities. She spent a lot of time working around the docks in Miami for money as a kid and growing up. And her job as a detective, her career as a detective in Miami, took her aboard a lot of boats, you know, during the drug running era in that area. So when Jane Bunker's aboard a boat, we're all good.
So Shiverhitch is set in Maine, and you touch on some of the issues that crop up in a seasonal coastal community. One is the divide between year-rounders and summer folks. In the book, the summer folks make decisions that have negative implications for year-rounders and the community in general. Of course, this is a work of fiction, but does this reflect a real divide between year-rounders and seasonal residents? Is this based on some real events?
Yeah, it's based on some real events. There's always a little friction there. And where I'm from, on Isle of Ho, this island off the coast, there's not the typical friction. It's very unusual, but there have been events that it seems like the summer community may do something with the island in mind, but they don't really think it through, and what they think is good for the island is not always the best for the year-round community. So sometimes the intentions are good, but the results are bad.
Another serious issue you touch on in the book is opioid addiction, and you mentioned Jane is in law enforcement and has made it her personal mission to crack down on drug trafficking. She also has little sympathy for drug addicts. What compelled you to include opioid addiction, and what influenced how you shaped Jane's feelings about addiction?
Well, the reason I included it, kind of a no-brainer. Every night when I turn the television on and watch the local news, it's a story every night. Either someone has died from an overdose, or someone has been busted for a meth lab, or, you know, running drugs. You know, it's just rampant. It is everywhere. But it seems that the people in these small coastal communities in down East Maine are shocked that it's here. I think that it's probably been here forever, but maybe it's now at so abundant that we're just like opening our eyes to it and seeing it.
Yeah. You mentioned that you try not to make Jane Bunker into Linda Greenlaw. So is she based somewhat on you, or is she based on a combination of people? How have you based her character?
Based somewhat on me, because you know her sense of humor, every thought she has to come from me. So some of her opinions are definitely mine, and some of her opinions I base on, you know, maybe friends or family members. The way I've tried to make her not me, real obvious things to people who know me well, are simple things like Jane Bunker is very frugal. I am not. I spend like the proverbial drunken sailor. Jane Bunker goes to the cafe and she gets the cheapest thing on the menu, even if it's something she doesn't like. That is not me. Okay, that's just one small example, but
yeah.
Thoughts and emotions, you know, have to come from somewhere, and that has to come from me.
Yeah. What's been the reaction to the fiction books from your fans?
It's funny. There are people who just love mysteries, who really love the series. And then there are people who like my voice, so they don't care what I read. But then there are people who say, when are you going to go back to nonfiction? I really like your nonfiction. So, you know, it's hard to please everyone.
Yeah.
I'm very fortunate in that people are pretty loyal to me, I think. I think that my readers are very loyal.
One of the things you have with, especially when you're doing a series, is you have to really keep track of little details, because your readers do, and they'll say, hey, what happened to, you know, this character? Or I think Phil Craig once said he got some emails where people were upset because he didn't have the kids in seatbelts in the back seat in his fictional book. Do you get that happening to you too?
I do. I mean, it's difficult. I don't... I get a little bit of fan mail, not a lot. I haven't seen anything with someone really questioning something. I do occasionally, like at a book signing, have someone ask, well, I hope you're going to, you know, follow through with this in your next book, because I really, or, oh, you should write a book about Audrey, the waitress at the cafe. I really like Audrey. I hope you have Audrey, you know, these scenes with Audrey, or I really like this or that. Yeah. So people kind of remind me that there are things that they want to see more of, for sure.
Yeah. Now, you living in a small community like that, I'm thinking Cynthia Riggs on Martha's Vineyard, who also writes mysteries, and she always says what the fun of it is if somebody, you know, upsets her in the community, she can kill them off in her book. Do you do that?
I haven't yet, but, you know, certainly there have been people killed off in my books. I haven't based them on someone maybe that I'd like to see gone in my life. But I can totally understand how that would, you know, it does feed, you know, if your emotions, no matter what they are, feed what you're writing.
Yeah.
You know, and writing, no matter what, I mean, fiction, nonfiction, whatever you're writing, it's all personal on some level.
Mm-hmm. Linda Greenwell will be at the Working Waterfront Festival on Saturday, September 23rd. We'll have more information about her latest book, Shiver Hitch, and the festival at our website, capeandislands.org. Thanks, Linda, for being here.
Hey, thanks so much.